You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any brights yet? I do.
Just like that, little Greta told me down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flat rock. Big Mac hook with only the right look. Pour in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide. Papa's going.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Jim Fortman, and jig tire Jeff Messina. And we are talking about tying bucktail jigs. We're going to be talking about how custom rods can upgrade your on-the-water experiences. And of course, Jim just gave us the fishing report from the 10,000 Islands. And as Nick would say, the cookie jar is open, and now is the time to get out there on the water. Some text messages rolling in. We got a text from Gabe Kaplan's agent. He says, awesome show today. Great to hear Jim without the confines of a hard break. Still waiting for those canals to fill up. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we're all.
Gabe Kaplan's agent, me too.
You could have walked across the Pack of Union in my area the other day.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Water is getting really, really low in some of those canals. So if you're boating in some of those canals, you definitely need to be careful because there are rocks galore, and usually you can see them, but not all the time.
Shopping,
so you want to be a little careful.
Shopping carts.
Take your pick. All right, we're going to head over to line one because we've got Dave Westra with Lear's Economy Tackle standing by.
Speaking of a lot of stuff in the canals.
Good morning, Dave.
How's the canal cleanup going, Dave?
I don't know. I haven't cleaned one up lately, but anyway, you know. There was a song years ago about June is busting out all over, and it is. But the only thing is that we're in May. We're just way ahead of schedule, I think. I mean, the tarpon fishing is off the charts up in our area, and, you know, and Boca Grande and off the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
Snook fishing is good. The fish have been out there for weeks now already, but, you know, it's their time to get out there. Trout fishing has been good. The one thing that we consistently hear from most anglers, not all, but most anglers, is where are the redfish? You know, they
yeah.
seem to be, for us, the hard rock to find. It's just, I don't know where they are, but occasionally, you know, we'll get people in the shop and they'll complain about, the lack of redfish, and 5 minutes later, a guy will walk in and tell you about the best redfish day he's had in 10 years, you know. So I guess it's called fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some people know where to go to find them. And sometimes it's just a little more work, but.
Well, the one thing I've noticed, there. And this probably happens to you guys up there as well, you get so caught up and, you know, you don't want to leave fish to go find another fish. And, you know, you get on a really good trout bite and you forget all about the redfish. And you're like, oh, we got about another 30 minutes. We'll see if we can find a redfish, which happened to us on Thursday. We're like, well, all we need is that. Well, let's go see if we can get a redfish. And
you know, back when redfish went into game fish status, it was amazing that within days of that regulation going into effect, people were coming in the shop and talking about the schools that they would see in Pine Island Sound of redfish just waking, just moving all around. And people would get up in front of them, and a school would come by, and they'd catch one right after another, and those schools and the sound would be dotted with these schools and schools of redfish. Now, it went on for about 6 to 9 months, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and nobody really seems to know why that happened, what's happened. I know they've gone through some severe weather-related phenomenons, I guess, plus and red tide outbreaks and offshore and spawning schools. But, you know, I get a lot of guys that come in the shop and they talk about Venice, Louisiana, and about the redfish fishing up in Venice and how really, really good it is. I mean, you guys go up there and the redfish schools are so plentiful. They look for the target to fish. They pick the fish out. They make a cast of that particular fish and they catch them. And it's a real different area between us and them. But you would think as long as it's been that redfish have been in game fish status, that we don't have more than what we have. There's something wrong in the system. Some of it's probably habitat loss, loss of grasses, and no place for the food to hide, the small critters, the crabs and shrimp and things like that. And it's something needs, I think, to be done, because it may take another, if we got really on our horse and got some seagrass growth growing and got a change in their environment for the best, it may take 10 years to bring them back to where they really should be, because, you know, they're basically in a catch and release status pretty much. I mean, you only allowed one, and so if you catch one that's out of the slot, you got to put them back. But,
yep.
Redfish have not come back the way some of the other species of fish have that the states put limits on. I mean, Jim will remember way back when people were catching 10, 11, and 12-inch sheephead and keeping them, and now it's not uncommon for 16, 18-inch sheephead to be caught, And our trout sizes have increased dramatically. So is our mangrove snapper. They're a success story, but redfish are not, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and if you remember, Dave, I know a lot of the guides running out of Estero Bay last year and the year before were talking about how we were missing, they weren't seeing any of those juvenile redfish. They weren't seeing any of those smaller rat reds and the juveniles. So it seems like, and even lately from what I'm hearing, it seems like there's a year of redfish, like a certain size class that we're missing in this area.
They are a moderate grower, unlike their cousin, the black drum, or even the whiting, you know, that grow a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
So that might, but like you said, the key is the habitat.
Go ahead, Jim.
They had the same issue down in Flamingo. I mean, I grew up fishing Flamingo when I was a kid. And you go out on the outside islands in the mud flats down there, and you'd see schools of them where there were, you know, 100, 200 of them in a school. You just kind of throw a gold spoon in there, and they would just, you know, you get bored catching them. That's how many, but you don't get bored, but you know, just a lot of them in that area. And the primary months that they would do that, it start really coming in, is basically when the fresh water started mixing with the salt water on the mud. The lack of mud flats that have been around, I mean, they're just now starting to get back in the swings, just like we, you know, this, the last 15 years we have been hit by a couple of hurricanes more than we have, you know, dating back to, and Dave will probably go back to me, it hasn't been like this since the late 60s, where they probably had the same change. But it also does have to do with, you know, the grass in certain areas. You know, you go up towards the northern end of Sanibel Sound, where, you know, that grass is really thinned out over the years, mainly due to boat traffic and whatnot. I would tell people, especially up in your area, I'd be looking at, you know, the Peace River mouth. That's because down in my area, we've actually found more in the last year and a half back by the river mouths than we have actually on the outside flats where we used to find them. But that, you know, it's like, it's seasonal. When they're there, when they're not, you know, I go back, I keep extensive logs, and I have pictures that I documented. I do it up, put it up on my website. You go back 2 years ago, we couldn't keep the redfish off the up with hooks. You know, there was a lot of bait around, and there was just a lot for them to forage. You know, we're actually catching more. It was actually like that at the end of right before Ian hit. We had actually a really outstanding redfish bite that happened. Ian hit. All the redfish kind of disappeared, and then the snook kind of moved in the same habitat. And the snook kind of took over that area. We actually had an outstanding fall season for snook. Now, something I did talk to the guys over at CCA over the weekend about, it could be the larger apex predators that have been moving in. Like right now we're having a giant tarpon migration that's happening on our coast. Everybody's in, like I would tell everybody up in Boca Grande, guys might want to prepare this because it might go in October this year or even November. Because there are still a lot of tarpon that are moving up from the Keys coming their way. We're still seeing a lot more than we normally do.
That water just warmed up so fast, yeah. So quick this year.
And one of the guys that I talked about over at the CCA said, you know, the bonefish fishermen down in the Keys have the same problem in spring with the tarpon, where they'll literally chase out all the bonefish in the area. The tarpon will actually do the same thing to the redfish in our area. If they get too many of these fish that are around, they kind of leave the area. Like April, we had a terrible trout bite in our area. The tarpon moved in. You had to go about 7-8 miles off the coast to find a sea trout. They were hanging out on the structures out in the Gulf because they didn't want to come into the habitat because they knew they'd get eaten. So I think it's just a combination of everything going on. Now, one fish that you left out that has been come back full swing has been a triple tail. You talk about conservation, putting them on a game fish status, increasing the size limit and the boat limit that is on there. This year I've seen more big triple tail, a lot bigger triple tail this year than I think I've ever seen. You know, when you go down a trout line, you see 7-8 triple tail within a week that are well over 25 inches. That's a...
Were you hearing the same, Dave, from people coming into the shop?
Pretty much, yes. Our triple tail fishery has picked up. Although it's, you know, triple tail is kind of an odd fish. A lot of people don't know about them. I mean, they don't know about them. They hear about them, but they don't really know about triple tail or really how to fish for them. And I can remember, this is a long time ago. Again, I keep going back to these long time ago things, but it must have been 30, 35 years ago. They had a hearing. FWC had a hearing here in Fort Myers, and there were a bunch of people there. One of the people there was Bill Miller, who was the outdoor writer for the Fort Myers News Press at the time. And they had this big panel. I don't know how many guys that were up on there from the state that were representing a state fishery. Must have been, I'll say 10 of them. And so Bill Miller raises his hand and this is like, again, this is 30 years ago, maybe more. He said, there's a fish I think you guys need to really take a look at. You need to, you need to start thinking about putting some kind of size limits and bag limits on triple tail. And the room kind of went silent for a short period of time, and you looked up on the stage where these representatives were from the state, and they kind of were looking at each other, and finally one of them said to Bill Miller, "What's a triple tail?"
Oh, jeez.
What's a triple tail? And so Bill proceeded to tell him, what a triple tail was. It is a good tasting, really, really good,
excellent taste.
One of the best, in my opinion.
But you don't go out and drift the flats and catch them every day. You know, you kind of have to work at it, and you kind of have to know, where they are and how to fish them. You know, everybody for years you had to fish them with a shrimp. That's what you just had to do. You had to go out and fish the trap markers, and Rick DePaiva got messing around with it, and he started using the DOA Terrorize gold ones, the 313 color and one other color. I can't remember. It may be the root beer, but just got a little fleck in it. And his take was that this on it, the way that thing is shaped. It's shaped like the tail kind of looks like a little crab that would be diving down with its claws and legs sticking out behind it. And he would go out and work those markers, and just because he didn't see them didn't mean that they were weren't there. They were just down on the rope somewhere or sitting down on the trap. And and instead of just sight casting, I mean, he'd go work every marker. It wasn't unusual for him to catch 15 to 25 triple tail in a day. They weren't all keepers. I mean, there were a lot of small ones, but they were ones that, that he realized these things are, just because you don't see them doesn't mean that they're not there. And he would fish them deep, and he'd fish them on the surface, of course, if he saw them. But he did extremely well on that. But there's still a lot of folks nowadays, they just run the trap line, and if they see them, they stop and make a cast to them. If they don't see them, they just keep on going, you know, and they pass up a lot of opportunity to try to fish those devils. But yeah, we've seen increased number of people that are talking triple tails now. That I guess stone crab season's closed now, and a lot of those traps are out of the water. But
yeah,
doesn't mean that any kind of structure or float that you see in the sound anywhere, stop and fish it. The markers that are out off of, say, Fort Myers Beach, they're markers that are, I don't know, 150, 200 yards off of Fort Myers Beach that represent the start of slow zones close to the beach. Early in the morning, people need to go out there and fish those markers, because there's triple tail all over them early that you can see. But as the day picks up and the boat traffic and everything picks up moving around them, they tend to go down. You don't see them during the daylight hours as much. But you go out real early in the morning, you'll able to see them nosed up to those marker floats.
Those are some great tips, Dave. Dave, let us know, what have the offshore reports been like coming into the shop? I've heard the snapper bite offshore has been really good. The grouper bite, obviously gag grouper opens back up June 1st. So give us the, I know we've got about 2 minutes, but give us the offshore scoop that you've been hearing.
Oh, it's been really, really, really good. And I think last week we alluded to the fact about the folks that were out there were fishing for African pompano and had a flat line out in the back of the boat and picked up this 80, 90-pound wahoo.
Wahoo, yeah.
Came whistling through at the time. But in general, the guys that are offshore, they're doing really, really good, and not having to run far. I mean, it's kind of since the storm particularly, the storm changed the bottom. It opened up some areas that had been sanded over probably for years, little ledges there that now in that 50, 55, 60-foot of water range right there, people need to kind of look those things over a little bit right now and start fishing them, because the mangrove snapper and the yellowtail bite has been extremely, extremely good. And not only using natural baits, you know, obviously people go out and they take sardines and they cut them up and they take squid and they use that. But
yep,
folks are out there jigging them. A lot of the artificial fishery has really, really picked up, both in jigging and slow pitch jigging both. I mean, and it shows that during this week, I wouldn't hesitate a bit to say we probably sold a half a dozen slow pitch outfits this week. Now, that's the people coming in asking for it. Not that we were humping it particularly, but they came in and they were talking about slow pitch jigging.
Yep.
And then there's a group of folks that are they're jigging just using bucktails and that type of a thing, not so much a metal jig, but in those shallower water areas.
Yeah,
and fishing offshore is good.
That's what I've been hearing. And if people want to go back and listen to that show episode with Benny Ortiz, who is one of the pioneers of slow pitch jigging, that is up on the Real Talk Radio website and or on the ESPN Southwest Florida website, and Benny really gave some absolute gems of knowledge during that show. So I would encourage people to listen to that if they're not familiar with slow pitch jigging, for sure.
It's an exciting change in our business over the past, I'll say, 3 years. Anyway, it's picked up dramatically. There are a lot of guys that come in now that are looking to jig, whether it's slow pitch or conventional jigging, that were bait fish fishermen for 20 years. And now they don't even take any bait out. They don't take any natural bait out. They go out with their jigs and do extremely well. And there's a couple of guys that go out on boats with guys that fish and bait. They're fishing squid and sardines and
they outfish them. Like I'm sure.
They outfish the natural bait.
Yep.
You know, that's really amazing.
That is amazing. But if you think about the fact that, yeah, now with more people being out there and there being more pressure, that's just a way to something different that those fish haven't seen. That's really getting them chewing. It's great. It's awesome.
A really unusual catch. These guys were out and they would catch a mangrove snapper, a couple of smaller muttons, yellowtail, and a henway. And that was something that I hadn't even heard about in years.
Wow. Yeah. That's super cool. Well, they're playing our tune, Dave. Actually, they have been for a little while.
Yeah, they have.
But thank you so much for the update and for the reports. We appreciate that. And we'll catch up with you next Saturday.
Always a pleasure, Dave.
Hey, you're supposed to ask me, what's a henway?
What's a henway, Dave?
2 pounds, 4 ounces. I'm sorry, guys.
Have a great weekend,
Dave.
Have
a great weekend, Dave.
Bye. That is Dave Weschman with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida at ESPNSWFL.com and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
This land was made for you and me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida, online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Oh, once upon a midnight period, woke with something in my head.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. Fishing is life!
Yes.
That's how it's done. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Jim Fortman and Jeff Messina. So we're talking about bucktail jigs, tie-in jigs. We're going to be talking about custom rod building and how it can upgrade your on-the-water experiences. And, of course, we've been running through all the latest fishing reports from across Southwest Florida. So phone lines are open, text lines open, 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776. We got a few more text messages coming through. We got a text message coming through here from our good friend Jerry Toporek from the Project Healing Waters Fish with the Hero program. He's checking in. And we got a text message, another text message through from Gabe Kaplan's agent, saying Dave slipped that henway joke in so stealth and nobody caught it. Yeah, he did. Dave's pretty good like that. And then we got a text message from our good friend Murray Richter out in Texas, and he says, good morning, Captain Debbie. Thank you for everything you do. Fun show today. Book of the week is High Percentage Fishing by Josh Elwine, which I believe you hooked me up with, and I appreciate that. My fishing IQ increases every time I pick it up. Have a great week. Real Talk Radio's number one fan in Texas, Murray Richter. Yeah, that is a great book that I highly recommend to anyone who freshwater fishes for largemouth bass. Actually, it applies, lots of the principles in that book apply across the board to any kind of fishing you're doing. And then we got a text from Art, the Bills fan, and he says, octopus is no longer on my menu. They're too intelligent and maybe aliens from outer space.
I would agree.
Yeah, have you guys seen that movie, My Octopus Teacher? When you watch that documentary, you really don't ever want to eat octopus again.
No, I've just caught a couple, and they can figure out how to get out of a live well that's locked.
Yeah.
I mean, I've actually seen them figure out how to get out and open it up. And
yeah. Art, you got to text us and tell us why you changed your viewpoint on that. Was it watching that documentary? Did something happen? You got to give us the scoop.
You know, there was an actual news story that came out just in the last couple of weeks that a number of scientists did a study on octopus, and they said that not only that, but they said they have certain sorts of DNA that are not recognizable in any other animals in the world. And therefore, they actually floated a theory that they may be from another world. I'm not kidding. Look it up.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to have to do this. Yes. Rick, and I have to say, I am really impressed that you just shared that knowledge, because usually,
I had to, because
unless it's walleye, share.
Well, when Art mentioned possibly alien, I said, well, yeah, that's a
so thing. That must be where he's yes.
just Google, just
this.
Google our aliens,
I'm
our octopus aliens. And it's a big scientific study that came out that floated that possible theory.
I'm going to do that on the mm-hmm. next break. 100%. Yeah.
See, I'm going to take my theory from The Simpsons. Have you ever seen their aliens on The Simpsons? They're all octopus.
They look like green octopus.
Yeah. So, they are really good bait, though. That I will say.
Excellent grouper bait.
Excellent grouper bait.
So, yeah.
I know the stone crabbers hate them. So they get into the traps and they'll eat the stone crabs.
Yeah.
We actually had one year, I remember the guys down in Everglades City just going, these octopus are killing us out here. I think it was right after Irma. That there was a explosion of octopus that were out there.
Do you see many of them down in your area, Jim?
No, not really. But I've caught them offshore. They're out there. They'll hold on to the bait, and kind of like, and then you see one, and you're kind of, they'll just stick to the sides. They're actually pretty cool looking. You know this. You hope that they don't ink on your boat because it is tough to get out. So.
Yeah. So Art just texted back and he said there is no evolutionary path for octopi.
Correct, and I did just Google it, and I just lost it. There's a from mindmatters.com scientific paper, could octopuses be aliens from outer space?
Oh my gosh.
Alien DNA found in octopus genetics.
Well, but
come on,
do
Jeff,
they,
throw
but
it
they
in
don't
there.
Have DNA. Do we have?
How do we
so
have
you would have
DNA?
To. We would have to have DNA from aliens in order to know that it's alien DNA.
Know. Or is it just alien because we don't know what it is?
It's getting deep in here.
Yeah, it is. Really, I don't know. We got to change the topic.
And speaking of that, hey, they're also very good deep fried, and they're also very good in sushi platters.
They really are.
Yeah,
they're delicious.
I will say, so Greg and I went down to the Continental in Naples last year on our anniversary, and we had some of the best octopus ever. It was so tender. It was just amazing. So I can't say enough good things about, got to go down there and check out their octopus appetizer. Fantastic. But okay, so here's a question for you guys, because you guys both fish bucktail jigs, you tie bucktail jigs. When you get friends on the boat and they're fishing bucktail jigs, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see when anglers are fishing those jigs?
Reeling too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, not working them slow enough.
Correct, yeah.
The other is not getting the tip hop, kind of using your wrist and popping it. That's because that's what really gets
and
that
using
there.
The action of the rod. So what type of rod do you like? What action rod do you like to use in particular when you're fishing bucktail jigs?
Moderate bass to a bass taper. tip, you know, something, but it's at the same time a light rod that has a lot of action on the tip. That's my perversion. What about you?
Yeah, 10-pound test, light 15-pound test, light rods, you know, fast tips.
Yep. And so, Jeff, because, you know, we know a lot about Jim because he's been in the studio many times before. But how did you – so how did you get into fishing when you first started? Did you have one of your parents took you out?
Yeah,
my
dad always took me fishing. I mean, ever since I can remember, he had a boat, a little aluminum boat we always had. And then I was telling you before the break that when I would go fishing with my dad the night before, I'd get all dressed. I'd have my shoes on, and I'd just – so when it was time to go, I'd just get up and get in the truck. I told my wife this. She goes, if I would have known that, I would have never married you. So, but, yeah, I've been fishing forever. I mean, as a little kid, I had a lake down the street and always went out with my dad. We'd go out, you know.
Catching bass in the pond, whatever.
Bass, yeah. Turtles, you know, mudfish, gars, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously snook and redfish and trout and all that. And
so have you traveled across the state fishing in a lot of different areas, or mainly just here in Collier County?
Mainly here. Offshore, I've been, you know, pretty much up on the West Coast. I've done the Keys quite often.
Uh-huh.
But mainly Florida. I haven't really done much East Coast fishing. A little bit, you know, over in Miami and Lauderdale, you know, doing some trolling and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing far north of here, just mainly around here.
Have you been over on the other coast to target snakeheads or clown knife fish or any of those exotics?
No, I've always wanted to, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always wanted to. I've got some areas.
Do it.
She knows a guy.
Well, I got some areas, and, like, I've looked online, and people show me where to go fish and stuff like that. I just haven't really done it yet.
Yeah,
but
you haven't made
I do want
truck.
To go catch a snakehead. I really do.
Yeah. Well, so. You're kind of busy. You got three kids, two girls, so I'm sure they keep you pretty occupied most of the time.
Yeah, don't have much time to sneak off for, you know, a day. So at least to go to the other coast, you know, if I take them out on the boat, they're fine with that.
Do they like fishing? Are they into the outdoors?
Yes, a little bit. Some do. It all depends. It varies. It now as they're getting older, I realize that they want to take their friends with them. So
yeah.
Now it's more fun when their friends are with them. So now we take them and their friends.
And they're at that age where you probably have to keep them off their phones.
Yep.
Yeah, he's also looking at getting a pontoon boat. He confessed that to me.
I was kind of joking about that.
The pontoon boat. The gray's starting to come in real good on his beard.
The pontoon boat. Yeah, you had the minivan. Now it's the pontoon boat.
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, the minivan you're keeping because, you know, that's your daughter's.
You don't, do you really have a minivan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, my wife has
totally
it.
I was totally kidding.
Now the kids will be driving. That's what they'll be.
What about your wife? Does she get out and fish with you sometimes?
She doesn't fish, but she actually likes getting out on the boat. So no fishing, but yeah, she enjoys going out in the boat.
So she likes just having a nice chill day out on the water. Yeah, and also just to remind people, I think I mentioned it last week, but we've got those license-free saltwater fishing days that are coming up. That's June 3rd and 4th, so it's the first consecutive Saturday and Sunday in June. So if you want to get somebody out on the water, they do not need to purchase a license on those 2 days. And then the license-free freshwater days are also coming up. That's June 10th and 11th. So obviously all the standard regulations, fishing regulations apply on both those weekends. But if you want to get somebody out on the water, they've been a little reluctant to purchase a license, that's a great day to get them out there and introduce them to fishing and hopefully get them hooked.
My greater words, what are you doing? Why are you not fishing?
Yeah, come on.
What, you gotta watch a movie or something?
No, you gotta get, especially now. I mean, you hear all these amazing fishing reports that are coming in.
Ignore
How can you not want to be out there on the water?
I can't stand the weather guy when they go, it feels like temperature. It might feel different to someone else. You know, like 85 does not feel like 91 to me. It feels like 85. So that's because when it hits 91, that's when you're like, yeah, it feels like 91.
Yeah, no, we're getting into the time of year where you need to basically be out on the water at like 6 a.m. and be off by 10 or 11.
I'm going to break in there. You hear that, Captain Rob? You need to start earlier. And I'm talking about Rob down in my area, who likes to start his trips at 8:30. You met Rob.
Rob.
Oh, my gosh.
That's because the first thing when we pulled up to the dock and he was there, I'm like, you going to be able to start at 7 a.m.? That's because we have a joint trip that we're doing in June. And he goes, I'm going to sleep on the boat and make sure I'm ready. That's because we can't get him out of his house before 7 o'clock. Sometimes.
No way. I'll tell you what. I am down at my spot getting ready to launch before the sun is coming up these days because it is toasty. All right. We're heading off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida at ESPNSWFL.com and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
Free as my footsteps, my footsteps on the ground. Certain of intention, but not where they are bound.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Out on the streets, that's where we meet. Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Jim Fortman and Jeff Messina. We've been talking about how to tie your own bucktail jigs. We're going to be talking about custom rods and how they can upgrade your experiences on the water. And of course, we've been talking about all things inshore fishing this morning, touching on some bonus triple tail, some really good triple tail tips from Dave on what to do to find those triple tail this time of year once those crab buoys are out of the water.
We'll have some real nuggets
of wisdom there.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit more to add to that at the end of towards the end of the show.
Oh, really?
A couple other patterns for like my area and other ways to let it. But I want to go back to that. What was that rat that you were just playing there?
Yeah, it was.
That was rat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's taking something out of my shop right now. That's because that's what I crank up in my
shop.
Oh,
do you? Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I could tie some rods with that, some bucktails, or sit down there, turn the radio
off.
Yeah,
that kicks up the productivity level,
right? Kim's like, the neighbor called.
But, you know, Jim, when that happens, you're supposed to yell, "Fishing is life!"
Yeah.
When motivated by music.
That's how Rick knows when he's really, like,
yeah, when I hit
been
a,
spot on with the tunes.
Yeah.
So, next time, Jim.
Yeah, next time. Don't forget it.
All right.
So you guys have fished tournaments together.
Oh, here we go.
I know you've got stories. Give me a story. I know you've got a few because you fished the romp in the swamp. You fished some of the Everglades tournaments down there.
So. A couple, you know, here and there. We always have that darn Achilles heel. I think Jeff as well is the same on this one. We only do tournaments that are picture taking because, you know, that way we don't have to worry about the fish jumping out of the live well. Mm-hmm. I think we just heard a story about that.
Yeah, you did. That was going back a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we just have a tendency to lose very big fish that we need in tournaments. And it's just one of those why we're always in, or we'll get a really big one, we can't find the other one.
Well, if you would stop bringing those yellow fruits on board,
hey,
Jim.
That's him. He brings that pineapple on board. It's supposed to be, it's supposed to be good luck. And I almost brought
some plantain chips the other day.
Don't even.
Oh, yeah. I saw them as a gal.
Yeah, I'll leave these in the truck. Yeah, don't do that or any of that damn bad luck cream, I tell you what.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I wish I could have blamed that on my phone faux pas this morning, but nope, can't do it.
No, but we had that one, what was that, about 2 years ago, where I hooked up on it, and you're like, oh, that's a big tarpon. And this thing just started going by, and that thing was what? It was well over 4 feet, and it just started dragging across the shoreline.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we see the tail, and we're like, oh, my God. God. And he was like, ain't a tarpon. So it was just massive snook. And I'm like,
whoa.
You know, we see those, you know, there's the over 40 slot, you know, club that it's in our area. And
yeah.
Then you have the over 50 club. And there's some fish down there, and like I tell everybody, you never know when it's going to happen. It happens to me. It actually has already happened once this year to one of my
clients. You better be ready when it happens.
Yeah, and you better hope you got the biggest rod in the boat, because they are just you can't get them up the shoreline. Dude will just turn around and be like, no.
Nope, yeah.
I'm going this way. I'm going to find something.
And there's nothing you're going to be able to
and
do to stop
it. We watched that fish just literally grinded its face. Mm-hmm. That's how we knew it was, mm-hmm. it was snook. That's because mm-hmm. it was literally on its oyster bar.
Trying to bury itself in the mud. It was like.
And it was like, we're sitting there watching in disbelief, and I'm just like putting as much pressure as I can on
the rack. Crazy Alberto will tell you the kind of tackle that you need to land those 40 to 50 inch snook.
Or we always get the tarpon. You know, like we'll be out of flat, tarpon, you know, just happens to get on the line. And one of us yells back, hey, we're not tarpon fishing.
But come on, what was the biggest heartbreak you had when you guys were fishing a tournament together?
I think that big snook was one of them.
Yeah, that was a loss.
That was like, I just wanted to bring that, you know, just get the picture of that with the other ruler. That's what we would have needed. You know, they give you a 48 inch stick, and they're like, well, if you get one bigger than that, you just put your other ruler.
You need to use two.
Yeah, you need to use two. It was like one of those. So, I mean, just to be like that and be like, yeah, we only got one fish. it's just always, you know, like we won't do the Calcutta, and we'll be like my fish that I can get all day long. Like we had that one year. Did you enter the Calcutta? No. And then they come out, okay, so we're doing black drum for the Calcutta. I'm like, really?
All right. Well, we got a couple of minutes before 9 o'clock, and we got Captain Steve's segment coming up. But let's talk a little bit about custom rods and the reasons why someone might want a custom rod for a specific type of technique or fishing that they're doing. So I know in a lot of cases, if you buy a store-bought fishing rod, it may not have the exact blank that you're looking for, may not have the exact components that you're looking for, and it may not just be exactly what you're looking for given your particular type of fishing style. So Jim, maybe can you give one example of...
I'm gonna toss it over to Jeff. Because he's got one for every water, and he can test.
Take it away, Jeff.
Take it away, Jeff. What are you looking when you buy when you're putting that order in for the custom rod?
Depends on what you're doing. My next order, I need a travel rod, a three-piece travel rod, because I'm going to be going somewhere. But you want just whatever you're fishing for. If you're like using light jigs, you want to have like a smaller rod, and it just has what you want, your feel. You can get the type of handle you want. You can even bring like a reel that you want to use and say, hey, I want to match this reel to a rod, and then you can get the right rod for it. It's, you know, all the right components, you know, the lightness you want, you know, it's just all the feel is the main thing. If it feels good, you know, then you're going to fish good. You know, you can put all different colors on, you can do whatever you want with it, so it makes it yours. So
yeah, you got the personalization, but the feel is probably, you know, the main thing. That's because most of the custom rod builders that are, you know, really been doing it for a while, we make our own grips.
Yep.
We're not, you know, you can buy all the kits in the world to put one together, and they'll be like, okay, you got to put a lot of this epoxy glue on there. It's like a paste that's kind of to fill in those gaps. And that's basically like when you go buy a store bought rod. Yeah, someone's making them, but they're just manufacturing, just putting them together as quickly as I can and turning them out.
Right.
That's why, you know, the difference is, like, when I build a grip, I'm actually gluing every cork ring together independently and size correctly to the blank. So it does give you a lot more feel, because
you've got more sensitivity.
Yeah, more sensitivity into that. Also, too, it's, you know, everybody's got a different hand size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people like a bigger grip, some people like a smaller grip. It's just kind of their own personalization.
I would say there's probably a lot of female anglers out there who could really benefit from a custom rod, because most of the rod grips are made for a larger size hand.
Yeah. And the other two is like, you know, I like a larger back end. You know, on you know, as far as the rear gripping goes, because I'm...
You like, I'm, what?
you had to go there, huh? So, but, you know, I do a lot of, you know, whip casting, and that's where, I like that longer rear end on that rod, and it's basically, you know, spits the line out a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
The other two is the components that you're putting on a custom rod. Like, I do not use any other components that are not going to be quality. You know, that's because all my standard equipment is like Fuji Alkanite, which is actually a better guide that you'll find in any of the stores, unless you happen to see like one of the St. Croix that are still building with the Fuji SIC guides, you know. But pretty much every one of the other rods that are out there, you use a lesser brand of guide. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you're really looking at them and they have that Fuji imprint.
Well, and I want to talk about guides too, but we'll pick that up after Steve's segment.
Okay. And that's the first thing that breaks on a cheap rod is the guide.
Yeah,
I do a lot of repairs on guides.
So I want to talk about that. All right, we need to head off to a break. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida at ESPNSWFL.com and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app, presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
Warm summer day, blue skies over your head, not a worry in your way. Have you ever took the time now to take a look around?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.